Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Billboard Sharpie Podcast. Mary Trust, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard. Of course, this is the place where you always find out why what's on the charts is on the charts. A lot of action happening this week, specifically right at the top for big fans of Ariana Grande, who have been, you know, waiting for that first number one single for years. They got it at the end of last year with Thank You Next. The wait for number two was significantly shorter, so we'll talk about her being back at number one this week on the Hot 100. Also, another thing Ariana fans will be waiting to cross off the bucket list, the Grammy Awards are coming up February 10th in Los Angeles. Ariana nominated for a few awards there, has not won a Grammy Award yet, so that could be a career first coming very soon as well. We'll talk about all the other acts who are nominated, Kendrick Lamar, Black Panther soundtrack up for a lot of big awards, Drake Scorpion. So we'll dive into her awards and all the major categories. Coming up soon, we're going to invite Paul Grine, who is the founder of the Chartbeat column back in 1981. So really the first guy to dissect what we do every week about what's happening on the Billboard charts and some of the big moves. So we'll have him on, and we'll have Andrew Unterberger from Billboard's editorial staff. We'll be talking about the big four races, Album of the Year, Record of the Year, Song of the Year, and Best New Artist. All the categories with 8 nominees for the first time. So we'll talk about how that sort of muddies things up in terms of picking a clear favorite, and we'll get into, of course, who we think will take home the big statues on February 10th.
Yep, it's part one of 2 parts of our Grammy Roundtable coming up over the next couple weeks. So, yeah, a lot to get to for that. Just before we get into all that, Trevor, it was a busy week on the internet.
When's the last time it's not been a busy week on the internet? You let me know.
There's a lot of good music stuff the last couple weeks. I think you were actually behind one of them.
I don't think this really took off the way Gary's making it sound, but I appreciate the pump up.
Well, there were two questions, sort of informal polls that came up that I thought were interesting. One was, if you saw this, what act did you see before they hit it big? Did you see that going on Twitter?
I did. I saw a lot of people, asking about just some of the people maybe from your hometown or just, you know, in their early iterations that,
For me, I feel like I keep coming back to Lisa Loeb. I saw her 2 years before Stay I Missed You became a number one hit. She was opening for Mary Chapin Carpenter in Providence. I'd never heard of her.
I thought he was going to say Mary J. Blige, and I was about to say, what a billing.
Every time I mention Mary Chapin Carpenter, you always think I'm going to say Mary J. Blige.
I guess that probably is a great window into who Gary and I are. If you say Mary, who do we finish out with?
She was great. I thought she was really good. And when Stay became a huge hit a couple years later, didn't surprise me. So maybe that's my answer.
You know, it's funny. We never were like much of a concert going family.
Yeah.
So I guess my parents aren't really big on crowds and that kind of thing. So I really unfortunately couldn't participate in this because I didn't. My first concert, I think I was probably like 15, and I went and saw Fergie. But this was like when the Duchess album was already really big, so obviously she was, you know, national star at that point. Yeah. So I can't really say that, you know, I've seen too many people before they blew up. Just not, I guess, not really part of the fabric.
The other two people I'm thinking of, and it's the benefit of how Billboard has so many people come in and play here. We play on Facebook Live or film the videos. It was my first or second week at Billboard in 2006. Taylor Swift came in, played our kitchen. Thought she had something. She turned out to be pretty big. And Adele, a couple years later, she played our kitchen as well. It was totally packed. Obviously, her fandom was building at that point. So before they became absolute huge superstars, Taylor and Adele played the Billboard kitchen.
That's what they're playing right next to the toaster and the dishwasher. And the Adele video, actually, there's a video of some of that. And she did some video while she was here. And I think probably my favorite line, just the understatement, is her essentially saying, you know, because she's big in Britain more than she was in America at the time. This is the time of 19, so this is well before 21 and everything came out. And she's talking about, oh, well, you know, I don't necessarily need to make it in America on my first album. Like, maybe I'll make it on, like, my, like, you know, 10th album or something. And it's like, oh, only, you know, understatement of the decade that it would take Adele 10 albums to become big in America when it, I mean, 19 was, you know, successful enough. But, of course, 21 at that point just, you know, ran the charts for forever.
So the other question that you were, I don't know if you were the only one behind this, but I saw you tweeting about it. Song you hated before you eventually liked it. Thought that was an interesting topic too.
Yeah, I think the internet in has a lot of ways has really helped, just helped the rediscovery become such a big facet. I think for me, I mean, a lot of things that I have in my iTunes library that I listen to, but I haven't necessarily put on Spotify, like, Because Spotify doesn't know that I have these songs or listen to these songs, I guess they don't know. They probably are invading my whole computer or something. But that allows, I guess, for some rediscovery of some old classics and things that from artists that, you know, I never really paid attention to before. I will say for me, probably the biggest two examples I think of when I think of this kind of question are both from the same artist, and they're really from the same era. And I think it actually, now looking back, was really ahead of its time, because the two songs that I think of are Nelly's My Place with Jaheim and Nelly's Over and Over with Tim McGraw. Both of those out in about 2004-ish.
Yeah.
This was, you know, and this was a different sound. I mean, if you don't know what those songs sound like, well, we're going to fill you in right now. We gon' still be this one, it's forever, it's forever. Won't you come on and go with me, come and go with me, ooh, girl. Right, and probably better known of the two, here's Over and Over with Nelly and, believe it or not, Tim McGraw.
When you think Tim McGraw, you think Nelly.
I knew he couldn't resist. I knew he wasn't going to be able to not say something. I knew it. Yeah. For the longest time, it was Nelly. And that song, you know, because Nelly had come out in 2002 with Nellyville and Dilemma and Hot in Her. So there was, an energetic kind of fun vibe to it. And I think when he went in this direction in 04, I mean, a lot of, like, sing-songiness to it. And I think that was a time when people, you know, were like, okay, you're a rapper, rap. You know, what's this? This, you know, sort of lovey-dovey kind of you trying to hee-haw. This is before auto-tune became big, so it's not, you know, it's not the most on-pitch singing. And I think, you know, nowadays that probably would be, you know, no one would kind of bat twice about it.
Yeah.
But it feels like, you know, about 15 years ago when this came out, that felt like, what are you doing? Like,
we played it on our AC station at the time. I remember
Over and Over? Or
Over and Over. And it was Nelly. We're going to play Nelly. And even Tim, we'd played Live Like You Were Dying was a hit about the same time. But it's kind of a stretch to play a rapper with a country star. But very 2019.
And obviously that kind of got resurfaced again when he teamed up with the Florida Georgia Line with Cruz. So it wasn't just sort of a one-trick pony. But I remember back then, being very much like, like, these Nelly songs, you know, we want party jams, we want anthems, we want, you know, this is the time that Yeah and Goodies and a lot of the crunk music's out. You know, we want something hype, and you're giving us, no. But looking back, you know, with sort of the contemporary influence gone and all your friends in your ear telling you how bad a song it is, I mean, Over and Over, I think, is a great chorus. Like, it's just, you know, it's catchy, it's fun, it doesn't try too hard. I mean, it's a dope track.
So you listened to what your friends told you to listen to back then?
Yeah, high school, weird time, you know? Couldn't believe it.
I think for me, growing up, Bee Gees music I just didn't appreciate at the time, the disco backlash. So I just thought all of that stuff was just so passé. And then One came out in 1989, and it sounded like all their 70s disco hits. And I thought, no, I'm not going to like that. But I did. I really liked it. And then wound up going back. It took a little time. But, yeah, all the disco stuff eventually came back around. So that kind of worked for me. Also, I didn't like Alanis Morissette, You Ought to Know, at first. I thought it was way too.
Here we go.
Way too alternative. Just way, way,
way too alternative.
Way beyond me. But then I got into it, and it was really it was head over feet when I finally heard that. I was like, oh, she can do something that's more of a love song. So that kind of changed everything. And then I
you didn't like she's too aggressive, or she was too.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then she went kind of new agey after that. So maybe she heard me somehow.
I'm surprised about the Bee Gees, because as much of a pop fan as you are, somebody who's big into, it seems, hooks and melodies, and I mean a lot of that stuff feels like it's very like in that mold.
It's very different from 80s pop. It's so
you're more on like, I guess you are more on like the AC side of,
yeah,
it.
So, but like, the high pitched voices, the disco track, it was so made fun of, I think, for so long afterwards, that I just sort of oh yeah, that's stuff you make fun of. So I didn't appreciate it until later.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the equation. It seems similar for both of us, is kind of the contemporary influence of, you know, what is accepted and what's not. And
right.
I mean, nowadays, I'm sure, you know, the big question is a lot of the SoundCloud mumble rap. You know, nowadays people kind of, obviously it's big in terms of people liking it, but there's a big backlash to it as well. And maybe you wonder, you know, in 10, 12 years, if we revisit it, is it going to be as derided critically as it seems to be now?
Yeah. The other thing that was related online the past week that I'm really jealous I didn't come up with, I don't know if you saw this, you see the 33, 45, 78 meme going on?
No, but I...
I can't believe I never thought of this, but it's one of those clever things. If you were born in 1933... You were 45 in 78.
Wow.
And we should probably say...
Those who don't know...
Yeah, those are all records, vinyl records.
Record, like, it's record size and the speed, I guess, of which that they had to come across. And it's, yeah, only funny because it's only funny. It's completely unrelated, but something I happened to catch yesterday. I was watching The View. Yeah, sure, fine. Sometimes I catch The View. And Meghan McCain and Joy Behar were on there. And Megan swore she, like, talked too fast at one point, and Joy was thinking she talked too slow. And then Joy joked that she was the 33 and Megan was the 78. Yeah. So this was literally last night I was thinking about, like, I was watching that clip. So that's kind of weird that you bring it up, because I was just seeing something that's talking about 33s and 78s.
You should keep watching The View. Keep coming up
with more great stuff. The View is on point. Also, so you were born in 33, Gary. So that actually applies to you, too. That's kind of... Wow, that's convenient.
I actually feel maybe younger than I ever have, because born in 74. That's almost as close to 78 as you can get.
Sure, I'm sure 75, 76, 77 have nothing to counteract that with, but yeah.
All right, let's get into this week's top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Come whenever you smoke.
Number 10.
Juke too hard, don't stand too close. You up around the drown, off this way. Doing all these shows, I've been on the road. I don't care where I go, long as I keep paid. Bad little fight.
Number 9.
I play with this kitty like you play with your guitar.
This girl's like, girl's like you. Guys like me, so now when I come through, I need a girl like you. Yeah, yeah, girl's like you.
Number 8.
It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow. 100 bands in my pocket, it's on me. Your grandma probably know me. Get my bottles, these bottles are lonely. It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow.
Number 7.
I wanna raise your spirits. I want to see you smile. No, that means I'll have to leave.
Number 6.
I'll sign up, no more love. And I'd hate to see you waiting.
Yeah.
Number 5.
Yeah. Gone on you with the pick and roll. Younger flame here in sicko mode.
Number 4.
Look what you taught me. Yeah, for that I say thank you. Next, thank you. Next, thank you. Next, I'm so fucking grateful for my ex. Thank you.
Number 3.
Then you're left in the dust. Unless I stuck by you. You're a sunflower. I think your love would be too much. Or you'd be left in the dust.
Number 2.
Just so you could take advantage of me. Tell me how's it feel sitting up there. Feeling so high, but too far away to hold me. You know I'm the one who put you up there. Name in the sky, does it ever get lonely? Thinking you could live.
And number 1.
All right. Back to the medley. So hopefully your ears are enjoying the top 10 recap in audio form this week. And right there at number 1, a brand new number 1, a debut at number 1. It is Ariana Grande with Seven Rings. This new chick, Ariana Grande, Seven Rings. The song debuts at number 1 this week. You know, this kind of came up a while ago, went pretty viral when she was talking about herself and her grandpa, and you know, the last name was Grande, and people always assumed it was Grande, and she never really just like corrected people. That's how she said it. You never heard this clip?
This is a brand new thing.
Okay. Well, apparently Gary didn't know.
I thought you were joking.
No, this is it. Because this is the clip that got everybody kind of like, huh?
My grandpa said Grande.
So should we all be saying Grande?
Well, my brother kind of changed it to Grande because like Grande was kind of like the I guess Americanized version of it. You know, like made it more like, you know, chill, like, whatever. And then my brother was like, we should say Grande. It's so fun to, like, say it. It's, like, funny. It's, like, a funny name. And my grandpa. But I think of him, and I grew up saying Grande, and I think of my grandpa, and I wish I said Grande more.
Okay, so Ariana Grande, Grande, whoever, she's number one this week, for sure, with Seven Rings, which debuts, as mentioned, right at the top spot. Her second number one debut, second number one overall, of course, Thank You Next, also entered at the top spot last November, on its way to 7 weeks in the top spot. So how does Seven Rings get to number one this week? Well, streaming, no surprise, plays a huge part in getting her to the top. We're talking 85.3 million U.S. streams in the first week for the song, which is the second biggest streaming week ever for a song by any woman. What's number one, you may ask? Well, that would be Thank You Next, Ariana's previous track. Had 93.8 million after the official music video came out, which is, of course, tapped into some huge 2000s nostalgia with Mean Girls, 13 Going on 30, Legally Blonde, and one other film that I cannot remember, Bring It On. Bring It On. All of those parodies played into that. So really, you know, the team behind her really gotten really tight with this music video strategy, putting them out on Fridays. They know what they're doing, and it's paying off in a huge, huge way.
Yeah, so there's a lot here. So Ariana is the fifth artist with multiple number one debuts ever, just those five. Ariana, Bieber, Britney Spears, Drake, and the leader with three number one debuts on the Hot 100 all time, Mariah Carey. Thank You Next, the album, it's not even out yet, and it's already an incredibly historic company. It's only the third album all time that has two songs from it to debut at number one on the Hot 100. So third album, Thank You Next, with two number one debuting songs in the Hot 100. So Thank You Next, and now Seven Rings. Drake last year with Scorpion did that with God's Plan and Nice for What. And before that, only one other album going back to the 90s. It was Mariah and Daydream with Fantasy and One Sweet Day. First two singles from that album both debuted at number one. So we're talking all time three albums that have had two songs each debut at number one. Ariana's now in that club. So along with that, she's the first artist, Ariana, whose first two number ones have debuted at number one. No one else has ever done that before. And she's looking at her history. She had 34 Hot 100 hits since 2013, since her debut. Until Thank You Next, she'd gotten to number two with Problem in 2014. But for those first 34 songs on the Hot 100, didn't get to number one. And now she's two for her last three at number one.
Yeah, kind of some parallel tracks there in that. You know, it took those artists so long to get to number one. But once they did, you know, the number ones kind of fell in line pretty quickly, especially for Justin Bieber, but also Taylor with 1989, you know, kind of started racking him up. Ariana's obviously, you know, the wait for number two was much shorter than the wait for number one. So feels like once you cross that barrier, you know, it becomes a lot easier to add to that total.
Even someone like Santana back in 1999, he'd gone 30 years without a number one, and then Smooth, and then Maria, just right after that goes to number one, too.
I want to say there's a little bit of a different story there. I don't think Santana was necessarily what the kids were going after, but, I mean, but also, I mean, those are just two impeccable songs. I don't care what you say.
Actually, speaking of Maria, which sort of turned into Wild Thoughts last year with Rihanna, Ariana has the quickest run of two new number ones by female artists since Rihanna back in 2010 when she went back-to-back with What's My Name and Only Girl in the World. So about 2.5 months apart for Thank You Next and Seven Rings. So I was talking to Republic Records about this recently, again earlier this week, how more is more. That's the strategy they're taking with Ariana in a streaming world where artists are just dropping songs more frequently, not necessarily waiting so long between albums. Pop artists tend to be more structured. Hip-hop a little more off the cuff in terms of releasing music. But, that's kind of their thinking, that if the demand is there, we're going to meet that with the supply.
I mean, I guess, you know, I don't want to get into a turf war with Ariana and her label, but it seems like she was the architect of that strategy. At least, you know, the sense came from some of the interviews that she's done that, you know, she was like, you know, wait a minute, why do all these rappers get to do this stuff and I don't get to do it?
Yeah.
So I want, like, you know.
It feels organic,
I guess,
too.
I want to give, if Ariana is the mastermind herself of it, I kind of want to give her some shine for that.
Yeah. It feels organic in a sense, too, with maybe Pete Davidson getting an assist for this music coming out so quickly as well. So it feels like some combination of this is what was happening in her life and label obviously realizing these are great songs, too. So sure, let's just move on. That's not me saying let's move on. I'm saying that's what the label was saying. Let's move on to new Ariana music.
Well,
so also part of number one, Rodgers and Hammerstein. We can't say, we're not sure whether it's Grandy or Grande. We're not 100% sure if it's Hammerstein or Hammerstein. We're going to go with Hammerstein. Does that sound good?
That's, sure.
So Rodgers and Hammerstein, iconic composing duo, started back about 100 years ago. Creating all these classic songs, Broadway musical songs. So Seven Rings reworks My Favorite Things. That's not the only song you probably know by them. Here's just a little sample of some of the songs they've written that everyone just knows them when they hear.
Once you have found her, never let her go. Once you have found her, never. Stout-hearted men who will fight for the right they adore.
She gets too hungry for dinner at 8. She adores the theater and won't arrive late. She'd never bother with people she'd hate. That's why the lady is a tramp.
Come
a lonely goat herd, lay, hoodlay, hoodlay, hee-hoo. Loud was the voice of the lonely goat herd, lay, hoodlay, hoodaloo. Folks in a town that was quite remote heard lay, hoodlay, hoodlay, hee-hoo. Lusty and clear from the goat herd's throat herd.
So the last song in that medley is a song called The Lonely Goat Herd, which maybe doesn't sound that familiar, but maybe you know it from what Gwen Stefani reworked it as, her song, and Wind It Up.
High on a hill with the lonely goat herd, lay, oh, lay, oh, lay, hee hoo. On a bed with the girl in goat herd, lay, oh, lay, oh, lo.
So Rodgers and Hammerstein get their first number one as writers together on the Hot 100 this week. They're credited on Seven Rings because it reworks My Favorite Things. The only other top 10 they had together was Wind It Up, Gwen Stefani reworking that song. So Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein. Richard Rodgers actually had one solo number one as a writer back in 1961. It was Blue Moon, recorded by the Marcells. So almost 60 years later, he's back at number one, and they're together at number one for the first time on the Hot 100.
So Rodgers edges Hammerstein 2-1 in the number ones category. Okay.
So let's get into our Grammy roundtable this week. Part one of two, talking about all things coming up with the Grammy Awards this year. We've got Paul Grine, as you mentioned earlier, Trevor, the founder of Chartbeat. There's no Chartbeat podcast with no Chartbeat, with no Paul Grine back in 1981.
Yeah, he's like the Moses of this group, you could say, I guess.
And also Andrew Unterberger, Billboard.com editor, a couple Grammy experts in their own right. So we're going to split this over 2 weeks, talking about the Grammys leading up to the Grammy Awards and get into all things Grammy. I will say one thing about the Grammy Awards. I always feel like as much as there's so much great music every year, there's so much that just never is even on the radar of the Grammys. I always wind up thinking about acts that I like that just I think are good enough to be on the Grammys, but it's always in the back of my head. There's just so much great music every year.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough. It's sort of the same way with the Oscars that, you know, people think that they're too, you know, they're too American-centric or whatever, or it's just about a hype because so many movies come out, and in that same way, so many albums come out, and we all know that it's impossible to listen to everything that comes out over the course of the year. So, you know, that's what one of the detriments is when you're trying to award the best, you know, does it lean too commercial? That's a real debate. You know, hopefully there's maybe some steps that the Recording Academy can take in the future to sort of rectify that and even the playing field for some artists who are underrepresented.
All right. Talking all things Grammys coming up with Paul Grine and Andrew Unterberger on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tonight, I just want to take you away. Throw your hands up in the sky. Let's set this party off right.
Players, put your pinky rings up to the moon. Girls, what y'all trying to do?
Paul Grine, founder of Chartbeat. Welcome. Thank you so much for coming back on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast.
Thank you, Gary. It'll be fun.
It was fun to have you on last year. Trevor and I, we talked all things the Grammy Awards last year, and you were pretty spot on, Paul. You were saying it was going to be Bruno Mars' year last year. No need to question it. You're, of course, correct.
I did think he would win album, and he did. I think I got one or two wrong, but this year is going to be interesting, too.
Well, let's get into this year. And Andrew, Paul will ask you first, and then Andrew, just overall, what do you think? Good slate of nominees overall for 2019, Paul?
It is a good slate. I think the nominating committee goes a little bit overboard on the hip-hop to the detriment, possibly, of one actually winning. They don't seem to understand that when you flood the nominations list with hip-hop, you could actually be hurting the chances that one will win because you're splitting the vote so many different ways.
Yeah, that's an interesting sort of perspective on it. I have sort of wondered if the increased pool of nominees will mean that, you know, one of the artists who is maybe a little bit fringier actually has a better chance of winning just as a result of, the more populist choices kind of canceling each other out almost. And so somebody with a more kind of devout fan base or just someone who doesn't really overlap that much with any of the other artists maybe gets to kind of gets a little bit of an edge there. But I do think it's a pretty strong group of nominees. I think in terms of the rap songs that they chose and the rap albums that they chose, they mostly chose the right ones. I mean, there's a couple sort of more controversial picks that I'm sure we'll talk about later. But I think a couple, in terms of recognizing the urgency of hip-hop as kind of the dominant musical format and popular music right now, I think they did a pretty good job. And even in terms of the non-hip-hop choices, I think they were mostly a pretty good slate of relevant artists, artists who did do some of the best songs and albums of this year. I think in terms of the nominations, there's complaints to be had, but when you just look at the eight songs in record and song and the eight artists or in album, I think it's a pretty strong slate. Now, I will say that the new artist category, that is a little bit less, I would say, a little bit less inarguable. I think that it was a relatively weak crop this year, and there were a couple artists, I think Cardi B, Post Malone, Camila Cabello, artists who you might have kind of thought just by virtue of them being kind of out on the forefront of pop music for mostly for the first time this year. I know, Post Malone's had some hits in years past, but those are some of the names you'd expect to see. You can also throw in Kane Brown there. You can maybe throw in one or two other artists. And they were all deemed ineligible due to kind of it seems like the best new artist rules are sort of enforced when the Grammys feel like it. there are other artists who like Luke Combs, for example, who is nominated. Certainly was a major presence in popular music the year before. So it's a little surprising to see him there and not some of those other artists. But the result of some of those exclusions means that you get a bunch of nominees who aren't necessarily – a lot of people who haven't had kind of crossover success yet or people who seem like they're maybe an album away. Some artists who haven't even released a debut album yet, and you probably wouldn't have seen them in years past with stronger crops. But the combination of the sort of weaker field, some of these exclusions, and eight nominees means you're getting some pretty obscure names in there.
Bodak Yellow was nominated in a couple of categories last year. Her debut album was released this year, and it's up for Album of the Year. So they're saying once you're a nominee, you're forevermore excluded from Best New Artist consideration. And I get the rule, but it does seem unfair to her to shut her out of a category on what's basically a technicality.
Sure.
And also, they denied the obvious winner and the obvious, a big star. The roster of winners would have been more impressive if it included people like Lady Gaga, who was ruled ineligible for a similar reason, and Cardi B. Sometimes they knock the biggest stars out of contention to their own detriment, really.
We'll get into specifics of each category, but in terms of overall, does it feel that the Grammys have the right nominees this year? Is there anyone majorly not up for big awards or more awards than they should be? How's the overall state of, they pretty much got the nominees right for what pop music and overall music felt like the past year?
Well, the interesting thing to me, and I've written about this for Billboard pretty extensively already, is the lack of kind of capital P pop stars, the sort of artists that we think of as defining pop music this decade, people like Ariana Grande and Taylor Swift, say Sam Smith maybe, and even Camila Cabello, who was a major nominee last year, and I think is still up for a couple pop categories this year. You don't really see them represented in the major categories this year, which is a little bit unexpected, especially because the last few Album of the Year winners have gone to those kind of marquee pop names like Bruno Mars and Adele and Taylor Swift. And you don't really have someone from that kind of class this year. It's more of a indicative of a shift of pop center from those sort of traditional pop stars, what we usually think of as pop stars from the beginning of the decade, to rappers and rappers who kind of meld rap with R&B and rap with pop. And so you have Post Malone and Drake kind of taking those slots where they might have previously belonged to a Taylor or an Ariana. And you do have Lady Gaga in song and record of the year, but it's sort of a different version of Lady Gaga. It's the Bradley Cooper-fied Lady Gaga, who, you know, not a lot of people would recognize as the same artist behind, you know, the Just Dance or Poker Face or Bad Romance, or back when she was more of a Grammy factor in her early days. So it's definitely a shift, and it's probably one we'll only see concentrated more so in the years to come. But if you're looking for something that was sort of missing from this year's crop of nominees, which I think otherwise is a pretty diverse and healthy crop, then it would be those kind of, you know, big marquee pop stars.
But is that representative if that's where pop music has gone? Would it be forcing it to put in artists who are more pure pop?
Well, I don't think so. And in a couple examples, I think, you know, going into this year, I would have called Ariana Grande's Sweetener album as one of the sort of locks for album of the year. You know, in addition to being a monstrously successful album commercially and on the charts and on radio, it was also her most acclaimed album to date. And you know, obviously she had a major narrative force behind her coming off the Manchester attacks. And, you know, she definitely took a level up in terms of just overall exposure this year and the relationship with Pete Davidson and becoming more involved in social media. And, I would say, you know, coming into the Grammys, you know, coming out of 2018, most people would kind of peg her as the kind of biggest name in pop right now in sort of traditional pop. So that would have been a pretty seamless nominee, and you could have had her in Record and Song of the Year too.
For what song?
Well, I would have said for No Tears Left to Cry, but there probably is a case to be made for God as a Woman as well. I think Thank You Next would have been a little bit too late eligibility-wise. But those two songs I think probably would have been strong contenders had they been nominated. And Camila Cabello too. She obviously was one of the big stars of the last year. Havana was the number one single. I think technically released outside of the eligibility period for this year, but her semi-self-titled album was really well received and very successful. Spawned another couple hits after Havana.
Well, Havana also got that,
yeah, Havana
that
live.
Great Grammy technicality of the live performance, right? being eligible.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to talking about that solo pop performance category, because there's a whole mess of weirdness going on in there. Yeah. But that's one of it, certainly. And yeah, so and you talk about the Carters even, you know, obviously getting into hip hop there with Jay-Z, and even Beyonce does a little rapping on that album. But Beyonce certainly is another one of those pop stars that you sort of pencil in, especially with an expanded pool of nominees. You think, oh, 8 slots, one of them's got to go to two of the most acclaimed artists of their generation. You would think for sure that they would sort of get in there. But for whatever reason, shifting, you know, shifting pop definitions or just, you know, kind of a new class kind of coming up to take the place of the old one. It's a different time.
I think the Grammys know that their voters lean pop. And historically they have, as Andrew just said, the last 3 Album of the Year winners are all pop albums, Taylor Swift, Adele, and Bruno Mars. And I think they consciously decided, if we put Ariana up or Camila, given our voters' pop leanings, their pop sensibilities, they could very well win. And do we want pop to take it every single year? Last year, the nominating committee bypassed Ed Sheeran in each of the big 3 categories. I think for a similar reason. After Adele had swept the big 3 awards 2 years ago, they didn't want to have another British pop star right down the middle pop winning everything for their own image considerations. They recognize the need for hip-hop to prevail. No hip-hop album has won in 15 years since Outkast won in 2003. And I think they're aware that that's a shortcoming, that you simply can't not like hip-hop if you're purporting to represent the best in pop music. It doesn't have to win every year, but there should be a sense that whether the winner is pop or rock or country or hip hop or what it is, everything has a more or less fair shot at it. And if there's a sense that the voters just don't like a particular genre, that leads to problems.
I mean, doesn't that lead to a big problem, of course, when you look at something like, okay, if we don't want a pop album to win this year, and then we sort of, you know, change the electoral map, as we'll say, to favor a hip-hop album this year. And then next year, let's say, you know, I'm sure Kendrick Lamar will be back in the conversation and everyone will be assuming that, you know, here's the time for a hip-hop album to win, and maybe there's a great J. Cole album, and maybe there's all
these
hip-hop albums.
Could happen this year with Kendrick Lamar, technically, the Black Panther soundtrack.
Yeah, I wouldn't want that to be the album that he wins for. But then suddenly, you know, then there's a question of almost, okay, well, hip-hop won last year, so now do we need to, you know, sort of shift it back to help pop out this year? Or, I mean, once you change the playing field, you really can't get it back to even, right?
It would be nice if we could get beyond this. And on gender and racial and genre issues, if there was a agreement that the Grammys are fair, the Oscars are fair, and we don't have to be so conscious of this. And maybe that day will come. I don't think it's here yet in either or in any award show. You know, there's still an emphasis on breaking it down by demographics and in the case of the Grammys, also by genre. And hopefully one day we'll move past that.
1, 2, 3, My baby don't mess around because she loves me so, and this I know for sure.
Mentioned album of the year not going to a rap act in 15 years since Outkast, and even that was not, you know, that was not a traditional rap album in a lot of senses either. I mean, the song that most people know from that album isn't even really a rap song in terms of in Hey Ya. But in addition to that, I think even more kind of notable is that there's never been a rap winner in Record of the Year, which
or
seems
Song of the Year.
Yeah, or Song of the Year, which is almost incredible to think about at this point. So. It would be nice to see a couple of those streaks finally fall this year. I agree that it's, you know, it's sort of unfortunate that we can't talk about this in terms of just purely what albums are deserving, what songs are deserving. But, you know, it's important, and it does seem like this is a good year. This would be a good year anyway for a couple of those records to finally start falling. But you know, your point is well heated that that maybe having the, you know, three or four rap nominees in a couple of these categories might, you know, it might upset the balance a little bit, and it might result in vote splitting. Who knows? We'll see.
We should mention that The Middle, which is up for record and song, is, you know, pure pop.
Mm-hmm.
And so while they're not, you know, big stars on the order of Taylor and Adriana and Camilla, you know, it's just a pure pop record.
Also, be interesting if a song that is premiered on the Grammys last year ends up winning the big award the year after.
Yes.
But and even that song, even though it is, you know, the end result of it is kind of a pure pop song, still comes from kind of outside worlds of pop. You know, it's a dance DJ and a country star sort of that are the ingredients in that song.
Yeah.
But yeah, the sum result is certainly the closest to true pop we have in that category.
You talk about changes this year. So the big four categories, album, record, song of the year, and best new artist, major change. We now have 8 nominees each instead of 5. Paul, how do you look at that? Is it a good thing in terms of it's more recognition of talent? At the same time, it's more choices, or critics could say you had all these chances to get it right with more people, and if you don't like the winner, how could you get it wrong with that many options?
If I could wave a wand, I think 5 nominees is the way to go. It's about the most number of things you can keep in your head at any one time. And when you get past the big four categories and you do encounter fields of 5 nominees, I think that's a cleaner look, and I think it's a better competition than this is just a big jumble. The Oscars have expanded, you know, about a decade ago, Best Picture. This year there are 8 nominees. Most years there have been 9. But they only do that in one category. They don't also have 8 nominees for actor, actress, director. You know, I think this makes the big four categories kind of cluttered and kind of congested. And it'll be interesting to see if this is a 1 or 2 year experiment or if they're going to keep it forever. I guess that they'll listen for feedback on whether people like it or don't.
Yeah, I sort of agree with that. I didn't see it as a problem when we only had five nominees. I didn't see that any reason that we necessarily needed to expand it. I mean, that said, you do see some interesting nominees this year that you sort of wonder that, like, if there hadn't been eight, if there'd only been five slots, would Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer have been nominated for Album of the Year? Would Kacey Musgraves' Golden Hour have been nominated for Album of the Year? Brandi Carlile in her various categories. It's definitely making room for some maybe more left of center choices. I will say, personally speaking, it makes it very, very hard to predict because even with all these expanded nominees, there's still very few of them, particularly for Album of the Year, that I would feel comfortable ruling out as, okay, this is just not, this doesn't have a realistic chance. I would say maybe one or two this year total. And so now they're talking about six albums that have a, you know, there's at least an explanation that you could give in theory for why this album would be considered a front runner or one of the front runners. And it makes it very hard to sort of see where the Grammys are going ahead of time. Maybe that's not the worst thing. You know, it makes it more unpredictable.
I think Album of the Year especially could be a category where the difference in the vote total between the winning album and the number five or maybe even six album in the tally will be very slight.
I agree with that.
It could be something could win with 20% of the vote or less. Because there are five albums, in my view, that could easily win.
I'm curious, Paul, if you say that there are five albums you can see winning, which are the three that you can't see winning?
I think for Album of the Year, I don't think Janelle will win. Though she's, you know, obviously very respected, it's not inconceivable, but I would put her sixth. I'd put Post Malone seventh, and I don't see her as a factor in Album of the Year, so I'd have her eighth. But the rest of them, are all very much in the hunt.
Yeah, and I think I agree. I definitely agree with your number eight. The her nominee is that being a nominee is about as shocking an Album of the Year nominee as I can remember. Just in terms of, I wouldn't have. Not in terms of it not being deserving necessarily, although I personally wouldn't have considered it one of the best albums of last year. And in fact, it's not even really an official album. It's a compilation of EPs and kind of odds and ends. So, and from an artist that, you know, probably seems like she hasn't really hit her peak moment of you know, kind of mass crossover exposure yet, that felt a little bit premature to me to nominate that for Album of the Year. But yeah, that was the one album that I sort of crossed off immediately as not really having much of a chance. Post Malone, I think, would probably be second in that. I agree with that as well, but I can't write him off entirely. He's too popular. He's too much at the center of what pop music is right now. And I feel like a lot of people in the industry really like him. And I feel like it would be almost like a doomsday scenario for the Grammys if the first rap album to win Album of the Year in 15 years was a Post Malone album. But
the hot takes would be flying off the press next day.
It would make the Bruno backlash look like a couple of Twitter eggs by comparison. Like it's a nightmare scenario, especially for Neil Portnow in his final Grammys year. And I don't think it'll happen. But I also don't think you can rule out the possibility entirely.
So with the we talked about three nominees that you and Andrew both think are kind of long shots.
I don't know if I would call Janelle a long shot necessarily. I think I would have felt better about her chances if she'd been nominated in either Song or Record of the Year for Make Me Feel. But yeah, just
kind of the collective momentum.
Yeah. But I do feel like that album was a very impactful album, and I feel like in the sort of Grammy circles, I think that it's an album that. You know, it crosses over to a lot of different kind of fandoms, and it was certainly one of the most talked about albums of last year. I don't know. I don't have as easy time writing that off as I would an H.E.R. album, where it's that album just didn't really feel like it played a major role in 2018 in any meaningful way. The Janelle Monáe album was at the center of a lot of different conversations, and it wouldn't shock me if that album won, certainly.
But Janelle was passed over for a nomination for Best Urban Contemporary Album, which is a bit of a sign of weakness that the voters in her home, you know, whenever you're not nominated in your home category, it suggests some vulnerability.
I almost wonder if that album was the victim of being a little bit too amorphous genre-wise. I mean, it's not really a straightforward R&B album. It's not really a straightforward anything album. There's certainly pop elements. There's rock elements. And in terms of even the audience for that album, I think it's probably equally from all three of those fields. So I could see it. I could see that it sort of gets left out in the cold genre-wise, but still, you know, maybe as a contender for overall album. But you're probably right. And I certainly would be down on my ballot in terms of the most likely winners, but I'm just not ready to write it off entirely.
But some of the best music falls between genres, historically. So the fact that we're seeing a merger of genres and maybe a breakdown of strict genres could make the Grammys' job of classifying things by category harder going forward.
So with the five albums that are left, three of them, Invasion of Privacy by Cardi B, Scorpion, Drake, and the Black Panther album curated by Kendrick Lamar. To Paul's point earlier, three hip-hop albums that at least both of you guys think are in contention, do those cannibalize each other, or what does one of them have that the other two are lacking that'll help it stand out a little more?
Well, Black Panther has obviously a link to the biggest movie of the year and a very important movie in that it was the first black superhero movie and now the first superhero movie period to be nominated for the Oscar for Best Picture. It's curated by Kendrick Lamar, who's a three-time nominee in the category. He has yet to win. And so there'll be a sense in a lot of quarters that he's due. Kendrick had 8 nominations this year, more than any other artist. So there's a lot going for that, even though, you know, yes, it is competing with Drake and Cardi B, which will make it tough for a rap album to prevail when the votes are being split three ways.
Yeah, I could see the case for all three here. I think Drake's chances are probably hurt the most by him being a Grammy no-show in years past. He hasn't really wanted to play the game the last few years since Views was nominated a couple of years ago. And Scorpion, you know, not that this necessarily matters that much for Grammys, but it was obviously not a very well-received album critically. Neither necessarily was Adele's 25 or Bruno Mars' 24 Karat Magic, I think. But it's just sort of hard for me to see this being the album that kind of breaks Drake out of that just honored to be nominated sort of role that he's in now. Cardi B, that seems more plausible to me. I think she's got all the momentum on her side. She's got nominees in all the other major categories, and certainly that was an album that was just a complete triumph, and from its chart success to its critical acclaim, and you know it was on pretty much every year end list to just general fan reception. I don't think there's ever been a bad word spoken about that album really, and it's also just the most it's the most traditional of the rap albums nominated. It's sort of an easily understood album for more old school rap fans, whereas the Drake album, you know, I mean, it mixes into R&B and pop in more explicit ways, and the Black Panther album, I mean, there is a history of soundtracks winning at the Grammys, but it's been a little while now since I think Oh Brother Where Art Thou in either 2002 or 2003. And even though I agree with Paul that there might be a sense that Kendrick's due, I don't think people are going to want the first Kendrick album to win to be an album that isn't really even a Kendrick album. You know, I actually think that's the best of the three albums. I think it's the strongest and most coherent of the three albums. And I think it really breaks ground for what a soundtrack can and should be in 2018. But it's still a soundtrack. It's still a various artists album. And a lot of people see that and go, I don't know. It doesn't feel like a proper Kendrick Lamar album to me. So I would say of those three, the one I think that has the best chance is the Cardi B album. None of those are the ones that I ultimately predicted to win the category, though.
So when Cardi B, does the question of demographics and personality come into play? Because I think a lot of people may think the traditional Grammy voter, there'd be something sort of repulsive about them thinking that we're going to give Cardi B Album of the Year, and you can almost hear the acceptance speech now. And for some people, that's a big, I want, I mean, I think there are people who would be just, jaws dropping on the floor. Does that hurt her cause at all, or sometimes with the new membership, does that potentially counteract that wave? Or
they invited 900 people. I don't think 900 people took them up on the offer. I think it was more like a couple hundred. But still, that's a large number of new voters. I think the fact that she's a woman will help. It's the year of the woman. And to be a female rapper in such a strong, commanding position, I think that strength may outweigh any brashness that might turn off older voters.
You look out the window while I look at you. Saying I don't know would be like saying that the sky ain't blue. And moods weren't made for sitting by the door. Since you don't want to stay anymore, you can have.
That leaves two albums that we have not talked about, which are semi-related. I think, along with Andrew, I think my pick for the winner is in this bunch. There's only two left, including an album that I think was came out at the top of the year that a lot of people liked. It didn't make huge commercial waves, but I saw it on so many year-end lists that I think that really gives momentum. And for me, that's Kacey Musgraves, Golden Hour. Also, Brandi Carlile's By the Way, I Forgive You, we haven't talked about. I mean, sort of two different picks. They're not necessarily Grammy hometown favorites, even though Kacey has won a couple years ago. And Brandi Carlile, sort of in that folk vein, is certainly the least commercial of these acts. I'm thinking the Kacey Musgraves album is probably the winner. I think helping its case when it won the CMA Album of the Year put it back on the radar in a way that people had forgotten about. The album came out in March, so it really has been out for about a year. Not the country radio and all those kind of traditional metrics, not a huge supporter of it, but I don't know. I think it just kind of mixes in a way that with pop and country and some disco feel in a way that is, I guess, to the sort of hallmark of winter's past, not offensive to anybody and really enjoyable.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you say there about the Kacey Musgraves album. But my pick for it was actually the Brandi Carlile album. And I'll say that again, like the 8 nominees makes this really hard to predict, and I am, you know, maybe more confident in this than any of the other nominees, but it's not by a lot, and it's not even by that much over Kacey, who I agree, you know, she had the CMA Album of the Year winner. I think that was significant. I think that her critical consensus is about as close to, you know, 100% approval as anybody in this category. And everyone just really likes her, and she still feels like an underdog story, even though she's been in this kind of mold for 3 albums now. But Brandi Carlile, I mean, she's a veteran. She's been around forever, and she has major industry support. I mean, like when there was that tribute album to her a couple of years ago, and there were all these names on it that you were like, wow, like how did Brandi Carlile get that? Like there was, you know, Adele, I think, did a track, Pearl Jam were on a song that I think Barack Obama wrote the liner notes for it, maybe, or at least had part of the, you know, he was partly involved in the liner notes. And I think that this was one of those cases where, sort of as Paul was saying, that like some of the more similar nominees are gonna kind of cancel each other out, and the fact that Brandi Carlile fans have been Brandi Carlile fans for a while, and this was kind of a peak moment of exposure for her, and you know, who knows if she'll get this kind of chance again? They're gonna kind of rally around her, and I thought the fact that she had nominations also for Song and Record of the Year for The Joke, I think that's significant too. I mean, these other sort of fringier nominees, Kacey and Janelle and one or two others, aren't really present in those other major categories. And I think the fact that she was able to get into all 3 of them, even though I personally wouldn't have predicted her for any of them, I think that means she has more support than we realize. And you know, it was a good album. It was an acclaimed album. And I think it's, I don't know if I want to call it a front runner, but if I had to put my money on one album, that would probably be the one I'd put it on.
Kacey has to benefit, though, from being sort of the de facto pop entrant. If you consider Drake and Cardi B more on the hip-hop side, Kacey, this album is much more pop than anything. It's not traditional country. It's a lot of pop influences. Does that open up a lane that, well, Ariana's not up for anything? There's no major established pop stars. This this kind of fits the bill, and there's nothing else really that sounds like it up against it.
It's possible. In my mind, that vote would kind of trickle down to Casey as well as Janelle Monáe and maybe a couple of the rappers that lean more pop. You know, Post Malone, as Paul pointed out, he's a pop nominee this year too. Right. And he certainly he gets played more on pop radio at this point than rap radio, hip R&B radio. So maybe certainly pop fans love Kacey Musgraves. So that could be a factor. And again, I think the album really does have a chance, but it wouldn't be my number one choice.
I think it might get hurt a little bit from it is more critical acclaim than I think mm-hmm. in terms of after it came out, there was no breakout single really from it. And that kind of hurts its cause.
But that doesn't hurt Brandi Carlile's because it's a different sort of.
It was more like
it's a different
Casey
album.
Like,
yeah,
she's
she
a different
was
realm. Play for pop.
I don't think anyone's ever. Yeah, no one's ever said like, when's that big Brandi Carlile crossover going to come?
I've wondered for years.
But Paul, your take on all that?
I agree that they are both very strong, both women. I think they appeal to a lot of the same voters. Country and Americana are kind of cousin genres. For that reason, I'm saying Black Panther. Though I must, as I said at the outset, I think the difference between number one and number five will be it'll be very close. And it really could be any of those five albums. But
I do agree with that.
I'll take my chances with Black Panther.
Paul, to that point that you made earlier about sort of the Grammys, if they're angling towards more hip-hop to seem more relevant— when Andrew brings up the question about Brandi Carlile winning Album of the Year, does that risk that same kind of irrelevancy if you have, you know, Cardi B and Drake and Janelle Monáe up for Album of the Year and then all of a sudden, you know, people are going to say, well, Grammys are going to Grammy and give it to Brandi who? Does that risk, like in a different way than, you know, but does that risk that same kind of question of getting, you know, viewer and youth support for years to come?
I'm sure that will be said. We should probably say that no matter what they do, they're going to be criticized. But yes, if there are five rap or hip-hop nominees, as there are in Album of the Year, I'm counting Post as pop, but if you want to say he's also hip-hop, then you'd have six out of eight being R&B, urban contemporary, hip-hop, that, you know, large school of music, and the winner is Brandi or Casey, there will be people who say the Grammys will always find the one that isn't hip-hop and go that way. I'm not sure if that's fair. I think when you split the vote so many different ways, it makes it hard for one of them to win. But we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, and it should be pointed out too that, you know, while it would be seen as, you know, maybe musically regressive for the Grammys to award Brandi Carlile with the biggest award of the night, she is an openly gay woman. I don't believe an openly gay artist has ever won Album of the Year before. So that there'd be that would be progressive.
George Michael, I forget if he was openly gay in '88.
No, definitely not. Not until
definitely not.
not for like a decade. I think after that still. So,
okay.
But yeah, I mean, so it would be. You know, it's kind of, you know, two steps forward, one step backward, or vice versa. Right. But, you know, there's a narrative that they can hang it around if the Grammys so chose, and also the fact that it would be a woman, certainly after last year, yes, where women were mostly shut out of the major categories, and Neil Portnow's infamous step up comments. So, you know, it's no winner, I think, except for maybe Cardi B would kind of satisfy everybody, and then again, you know, you would have maybe the old fashioned music fans who would tut tut at that. But yeah, there's at least positives, I think, to be read into almost every one of these nominees, with, you know, except for maybe Post Malone. So if I was Post Malone's agent, I would be praying that he loses in all major categories in the Grammys. I think nothing good will come to him if he's a big winner.
I agree, and it's again not his fault.
Nope.
He's a white hip hopper who makes very good records, but. Yes, he would be, as Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, you know, were mm-hmm. beat up after they beat Kendrick Lamar. It's not their fault they beat Kendrick Lamar. But I think it hurt their career that they won four Grammys. So maybe artists should consider not entering their stuff. I don't know. It can be a problem for them, as it would be for Post, and it shouldn't be. They should be able to just celebrate their achievement and not worry about the the repercussions.
Let's do one more category, Paul, Andrew, Trevor. For this week, we'll pick up. This is we got so much to talk about. We'll spread this out over 2 weeks. So let's do one more for this episode. Best new artist. Let's run down the names: Chloe and Halle, Luke Combs, Greta Van Fleet, Her, Dua Lipa, Margot Price, Bebe Rexha, Georgia Smith.
Can we start with the omissions? Do you think there's anybody here who was not nominated who should have been this year?
If you want to throw Juice WRLD in there, I think probably he had a massive year.
Yes.
And you know, I feel like most of the kind of the rappers from that SoundCloud set don't traditionally get recognition in the major Grammy categories. I guess Lil Uzi Vert got nominated either last year or 2 years ago. I can't remember, but yeah, he's certainly one of the biggest artists that didn't get. That both didn't get acknowledged and didn't have a reason why he shouldn't be. But yeah, it's hard to come up with names that are missing. Billie Eilish too, I think, is someone who had a pretty major last 12 months, but she doesn't have an album yet. You certainly see bigger things for her in the future, and maybe she'll get nominated next year.
LMA not nominated, even though Boot Up was a massive hit. And those three artists are a little more on the fringe, kind of experimental R&B, if you want to call it that. And she's definitely way more in the commercial sort of classic lane. And I think people are surprised that they sort of opted for the alt R&B versus somebody who, especially I guess in the shadow of Alessia Cara last year, seems kind of tailor-made for that commercial R&B pop mix.
LMA's song Boot Up is up for Song of the Year. I think there may have been voices and sentiment in the committee room, let's make two artists happy and not just one. We can give her both, but if we maybe go with Georgia Smith instead, then we give exposure to another worthy artist. And I see that thinking, I it makes sense. I feel bad for Ella that she, I think, is a terrific singer and a promising artist, and she was knocked out because of, their strategizing.
Two of the biggest pop names, the acts that had the two biggest hits of this list, Bebe Rexha and Dua Lipa, again, same thing, is pop at some sort of a disadvantage this year when it's considered a little more old school? But again, those were the two huge hits. Paul?
I think Dua Lipa is definitely in the mix. With eight finalists, it helps me to kind of figure out who are the top four. And I think it's Luke, Her, Greta Van Fleet, and Dua Lipa. I think any of those four could win. And it's harder for me to see any of the other people winning. And Dua, is coming on strong. She'll probably win the Dance Award for Electricity. So she's definitely one of the front runners for this.
When we look at this award historically, is this an award? I think some people think maybe is it driven by one single and you're a hit maker and that helps you out, or is it really one of the few awards that really takes a whole body of work into account? Because I think this category, people probably remember, I guess, the upsets more than they remember sort of the supposed to wins. The Esperanza Spaldings, the Bon Ivers, the people who. Sort of as a sum of their body of work are probably more impressive than just having that one hit or two hit singles to their name that year.
Yeah, I think you've seen it both ways. I would say that last year's winner Alessia Cara is probably a little bit closer to the one or two hit singles by that point, because she had technically been around for a couple years. She probably had three or four, but she didn't really have I wouldn't have considered her to be like a career artist at that point necessarily. But then again, the year before that we had Chance the Rapper. And he had already built up a fan base over half a decade at that point, and it really throws into stark relief just exactly what best new artist means, because there are these artists that feel like they've been around forever. I mean, Bebe Rexha is one of them. She's been a major factor in pop music since at least 2013, maybe even longer than that. So the best new artist it can go either way. I think you can have the artist that's sort of popping off of a couple radio hits and the one that feels like they've already built up a pretty solid fan base. And I sort of agree with Paul's top four there. I think I had pegged her for this award just because her Album of the Year nomination came so far out of nowhere that it's the same sort of thing as Brandi Carlile. I just figure that she has more support than we realize. And you know, in a relatively weak class of new artists, I think that the Album of the Year advantage, you know, that's a pretty big edge. But I also can see the case for Greta Van Fleet as being, you know, for voters who have kind of felt left out in the wilderness for the lack of rock nominees the last few years. This is the most traditionally rock nominee in the major category we've had, and I don't even know how long. Probably at least 3 or 4 years. And you know, the discussion about them has gotten so immersive with that infamous Pitchfork review that was so negative, and now they're playing SNL recently. Like it seems. There's a case to be made for Greta Van Fleet, even though I'm not even sure if their album was released. It was either released at the very end of the eligibility period or the very beginning of this year's eligibility period.
The album is going to be in next year.
Okay.
I think so, the EP is
the
one.
EP. Yeah. So, I mean, that they don't really have traditional hits in the Alessia Cara Dua Lipa sense. So that might hurt, but neither did ACR, and she's certainly in the mix. So it really could go either way. I would personally like to see Dua Lipa win it because she's, I think, the artist who 5 years from now we're going to look back and say, okay, this was the start of something and like that really kind of got even bigger from there. Whereas Greta Van Fleet, I mean, I don't know if I see them necessarily being as big as Led Zeppelin 5 years from now. I think this is probably as good as it's going to get for them. But yeah, so it'll be really interesting to see which way the voters go. I almost dare not predict.
She drives me wild.
I will dare to predict. I think Luke Combs could win.
Okay.
His album has just had amazing longevity. It's been number one in 3 calendar years now. And it is very much in the country field, but that's the country vote is probably something like 20% of the Academy. And that's all you need to win when you have 8 nominees. I think, again, it'll be tight with her and Dua and Greta Van Fleet, but I'll go with Luke.
If you're Dua Lipa or BB Rex in this category, do you want to win this award? And I only ask because of course you want to win. But I guess looking in the past, like the past couple of years, I'm thinking of with Meghan Trainor, Alessia Cara. Not that they got backlash for that, but it seems like, you know, that was sort of a pinnacle of a career that nobody really saw coming, and they haven't been able to capture that same kind of momentum, you know, even remotely close since. And I wonder, especially given the slate of nominees, if people think that the Hers and the Georgia Smith and the quote unquote, you know, true artists get overshadowed by these pop acts, if there is potential for, you know, that sort of in that Post Malone kind of way, but not to that same extent, but that kind of backlash where, of course, you know, once again, Grammy's gonna Grammy.
I'm impressed when people don't do terribly well in the nominations, maybe just get a couple of minor nominations, and they tweet about it and say, oh, I'm so thrilled to be nominated for this. You know, I would think they'd be so disappointed and crushed, but they'll take whatever they got because we forget sometimes how much it means to artists. They grew up, every artist who's involved in music grew up watching the Grammys and the American Music Awards and the Billboard Awards and really did dream that one day they would be there. And so it means a lot to them. If I was a manager of any of these artists, I would tell them not to sweat it if they lose because it really doesn't matter. You want to win, but, it, you know, Taylor Swift lost Best New Artist. And, you know, it didn't end her career. The list of people who didn't win is as impressive as the list of people who did.
Yeah, and I think if you look back through the history of this award, I mean, obviously there's, you know, there's sort of the reputation of that Best New Artist curse, and you can certainly find plenty of examples that show that, and whether it's, you know, extreme cases like Milli Vanilli or less, just maybe more predictable ones like Shelby Lynn, But for every artist like that, there's a Christina Aguilera or Maroon 5 who goes on to have, you know, a decades-long career. And so, you know, it's hard to predict from the outset, but I think it ends up being close to 50-50 at the end of the day. And as for someone like Dua Lipa, I don't think that she's really facing much in the way of a backlash if she does win. I think that the Alessia Cara backlash last year wasn't really so much about Alessia Cara just as much as it was, well, A, people wanted SZA to win. I don't know if there's a nominee this year that the people will really get behind the same way. And B, just because, you know, there'd been a push for her the year before. It felt like the year before was the year where she should have been recognized. She wasn't then. Yes. So it kind of felt like she was the Best New Artist nominee 2 years in a row. And for her to finally win like that, it wasn't, you know, it didn't feel right intuitively for most viewers. So
here had been a top five record, you know, a year or two before she won, which is when you ignore a top five record, you know, I think the fact that she won last year is the main reason Post Malone wasn't eligible this year, because they said we maybe are being too generous with letting them have a 2 year opportunity and maybe we need to cut it back. Combs is nominated and he's been strong in the country market for 2 years.
Yeah, Luke would make sense, I think, to me, but we'll see.
I'm also realizing, not that anybody's thinking about this, but it just hit me that Luke Combs is the only guy nominated in that field, which, you know, I'm sure backwards thinking, but, and not that I'm sure that's going to sort of help him out, but just curious that it just hit me that, yeah.
All right, with eight nominees in these categories, we've had a lot to talk about. So let's come back next week. Andrew, Paul, going to have you back for part two. We'll get into Record of the Year, Song of the Year, some of the other categories as well, because Grammys aren't here yet, so we got time.
Can't wait.
Yeah. Okay, great.
All right, so that was part one of two of our Grammy roundtable discussion. We'll be back next week to finish out the big four categories, talking about Record and Song of the Year. And as we look ahead to the Grammys on February 10th, I'm sure the Recording Academy certainly will hopefully pause and honor one of the great Grammy-winning artists that we lost this week, James Ingram, at age 66, a two-time Grammy Award winner. He won two awards in the 1980s, Best Male R&B Vocal Performance, 1982 for 100 Ways, and 1985, a Best R&B Duo Group Vocal Performance with Michael McDonald, the song Yeah, Mo Be There. So really one of the great R&B vocalists of the past half century. And even though, you know, he may not have gotten sort of the same acclaim or shine as maybe someone like a Luther Vandross, like an Usher, like a Prince, like a Michael Jackson. You know, he's one of those guys who was just so, so talented that hopefully maybe one of the silver linings of this is people really can take some time, especially with all the tools that we have now, to really dive into the catalog because, yeah, everybody can't be necessarily a superstar, but that doesn't mean just because they're not these huge artists that they don't put out quality work, that they are not as talented as some of these superstars. So really hoping that some people are able to dive back into that catalog, specifically a lot of the 80s material, work with Quincy Jones on a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, he's a singer for now and forever.
Yeah, I remember in late 1990 when I Don't Have the Heart came along, it was kind of a slow-building song on the Hot 100. I remember it went to number one. I sort of thought it was a little surprising. It was a time when Vanilla Ice was going to number one at that point. And for just a classic R&B song with such a great vocal, such a great melody, to go to number one, I thought it really just showed that, well, a good song can really be appreciated, a really deserving number one.
Exactly right. So in tribute, you know, to James, and we'll see what the Grammys cook up. I know their plate's got to be kind of big this year with Aretha and Mac Miller and a lot of others, so hopefully there's time to get something appropriate for James together. We here want to do our part and honor the number ones that he had on the Hot 100. I Don't Have the Heart, his second number one in the early 90s. His first came back in the 1980s, a duet with Miss Patty Austin. We're going to close with that song that got him to the top of the Hot 100 for the first time. Here is Baby Company.
There's a brand new way of looking at your life when you know that love is standing by your side. Stay.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.